You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. In mid-December, the city of Manzanita declared a local state of emergency after erosion and wet conditions destabilized a slope on city-owned property. That property is on Oak Street near the Public Works building. Four homes below were in danger of being impacted if a landslide occurred. Now, Manzanita City Manager Leila Aman says a geotechnical evaluation shows the movements do not appear to extend deeper into the underlying geologic materials. Following a site investigation and conversations with a geotechnical consultant, Aman says the recommended course of action is to remove the settled material at the top of the slide area. This work began on Monday. The city has installed control points and will continue monitoring the area and is developing further plans to stabilize the soil. The original local emergency declaration was set to remain in effect through at least Thursday. Aman plans to ask for an extension of the emergency declaration at a city council meeting tonight. She says the request is out of an abundance of caution, so the city can fully assess the situation once the mitigation work is complete. The Manzanita City Council meets at 6 p.m. Oregon National Guard troops are being sent home after 3 months under federal control. The troops were called up to protect federal officers outside of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Portland, but their deployment was blocked by a legal case. These National Guard members had been stationed at Camp Rylea in Warrenton. Hundreds of Guard members in Illinois and California are also being demobilized, federal officials said Tuesday. That process requires troops to travel to Fort Bliss, Texas, before returning home. In a statement, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek said she was relieved, but that it, quote, does not make up for the personal sacrifices of more than 100 days, including holidays spent in limbo. Federal officials have announced Oregon will receive more than $197 million to invest in rural healthcare projects this year. It's slightly less than the $200 million the Oregon Health Authority requested from the new Rural Health Transformation Program run by the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And it's significantly less than the average $400 million per year that the state's rural communities are expected to lose in federal health care funding during the next decade because of changes to Medicaid eligibility that congressional Republicans passed this summer. U.S. Representative Maxine Dexter, an Oregon Democrat, has said the funding passed by congressional Republicans was, quote, like throwing someone a life jacket after sinking their ship. Oregon will distribute the money received to local governments and organizations for projects that provide preventative care to more people, boost the number of healthcare workers in rural communities, and improve technology and data infrastructure in rural hospitals and clinics. Roughly $20 million of the award will go to healthcare projects undertaken by Oregon's 9 federally recognized tribes. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Historian. Online at dailyhistorian.com. Oregon regulators say a railroad company is responsible for a train derailment almost a year ago in Corvallis. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
Portland and Western Railroad faces a state fine of almost $82,000. In January 2025, a trestle bridge owned by the company collapsed, sending rail cars carrying urea into a river below. Urea is widely used in fertilizers. It can damage river ecosystems by causing algal blooms and depleting oxygen. It can also break down into toxic ammonia. All of that can harm fish and wildlife. In addition to the fine, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality has ordered Portland and Western to submit a report about its other trestle bridges and how it keeps up on repairs. The company has appealed the penalty and says the bridge collapse was caused by flooding. Portland and Western staff didn't respond to a request for comment. I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
Oregon's cannabis industry has failed to reach the $1 billion sales mark since 2021. The latest state data shows marijuana sales declined by 3.5% last year to $925 million. As Kyra Buckley reports, demand is stable, but low prices are hurting retailers.
For the last 2 years, Oregon's retail cannabis industry has contended with some of the lowest prices ever. Marijuana flower is selling for less than $4 per gram, according to the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. That's down from around $10 per gram when the drug was legalized in 2014. Cannabis attorney Vince Lewowski says the demand is stable, but production keeps increasing. Last year's harvest topped 13 million pounds.
It was the largest ever recorded, and I don't think you'll see prices increase at all anytime in the near future. In fact, they may keep coming down.
Slowowski says the federal government is considering changing marijuana's status. The move could increase margins for retailers overnight, but it's uncertain when or if those changes will happen. I'm Kyra Buckley reporting.
A local activist has sued Ashland, claiming city officials violated his right to free speech. Jefferson Public Radio's Justin Higginbottom reports.
Police escorted Torna McKnight from a September city council meeting during public comment after the progressive activist called Ashland's police chief a fascist. The topic of the meeting was an expansion of the city's enhanced law enforcement area. Ashland City Council has a rule against personal attacks during public comment, but McKnight's attorney, Alicia Montgomery, says calling an official fascist is protected political speech.
I think it's important to note that the First Amendment protects political speech even if it's offensive or derogatory. The Constitution does not require citizens to be polite to public officials.
The complaint alleges Ashland's policy restricting public comment is overbroad and unconstitutional. McKnight is seeking damages and an injunction to stop the city's enforcement of its rule against personal attacks. I'm Justin Higginbottom in Ashland.
A new voucher program hopes to prevent illegal dumping in the Illinois Valley. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports.
The nonprofit The Motherline is spearheading a trash voucher program. Volunteers have spent months cleaning up 300,000 pounds of waste in public woodlands. Co-director Cindy Palacios says now the goal is to prevent the forest from being filled with garbage again.
There's a lot of tires. There are lots of RVs and junked cars that the BLM is dealing with, but then they get smashed up and turn into trash, and we deal with parts of them. But mostly it is bag after bag of household trash.
People in need of a voucher can fill out a short application at the Illinois Valley Family Coalition so they can take a free load of trash to the transfer station. Funding for the program is provided by the Josephine County Solid Waste Agency. 84 vouchers have already been distributed. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Turning now to news from Washington State. The announcement of the Trump administration's intent to close a climate research center in Boulder, Colorado, is causing worry amidst atmospheric scientists all over the world, including here. More from KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe.
The National Center for Atmospheric Research, or NCAR, was founded by the National Science Foundation in 1960. It's run by a consortium of universities, including the University of Washington. Among the breakthroughs it's credited with is the detection of microbursts and wind shear that can cause plane crashes. It lends support to climate research projects all over the world. The Trump administration says it's one of the largest sources of climate alarmism in the country.
As a climate scientist, I don't think that talking about climate change is hysterical. I think it's entirely practical.
Abigail Swan is a professor of atmospheric sciences and biology at the University of Washington and the UW's current representative to the consortium.
We want to know what's coming and we want to be able to prepare for it so that we can stay safe.
Swan says forecasts of extreme weather, like the recent flooding on local rivers, benefit directly from NCAR's support. Trump's Office of Management and Budget says it may move some of the center's work to other locations. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
In Washington's second most populous county, a different way of doing juvenile probation is seeing progress. NWPB's Lauren Gallup reports.
Inside a small corner building in downtown Tacoma, there's a skate park. It's called Alchemy Skateboarding. It's a place for kids and teens to hang out, check out new gear, and of course, skateboard. But it's also a place where young people can get a fresh start. To Taylor Woodruff runs Alchemy.
We joke a lot that skateboarding is just the perfect vehicle to talk about risk mitigation or risk awareness because it's like mandatory to fall down and get hurt.
Alchemy is one of many community organizations that partners with the Pierce County Juvenile Court. These partnerships help the county do probation differently.
The goal is that they get plugged in with a community partner and a place where they have access to whatever things they might need.
It's called opportunity-based probation. Instead of going through typical probation, that's a lot like what adult offenders go through, young people go to community programs. There, they learn new skills and connect with other young people. The program rewards good choices and behaviors. That's different from the more traditional model that punishes kids for messing up. At Alchemy, skateboarding is the focus. Young people go there once a week for 10 weeks. They learn skills ranging from how to skateboard to designing clothes.
We really try to tailor the program to fit whatever the person in the program is interested in.
Pierce County and researchers at the University of Washington received funding from the Annie E. Casey Foundation in 2015 to transform Pierce County's probation system. With that, they created opportunity-based probation. Kate Cunningham is a clinical psychologist and clinical faculty member at CoLab. That's a University of Washington-based think tank working on youth wellness. She's part of the team that created opportunity-based probation. She says it was based on adolescent brain development.
Youth are really highly influenced still by their context, so their environment, who they're around, family, friends, social supports.
The model is structured to guide youth towards goals that they help develop. According to the court, in this program, youth have the chance to earn incentives and a possibility for an early review hearing.
A big part of it is increasing community supports around the young person.
And the program is working. According to a 2025 University of Washington study, youth recidivism in Pierce County was lower than the state average. Hilltop Artists, a youth development organization that uses glass art as a means of engaging young people, hosts another one of these programs. They call it Arts Connect, and it's for court-connected girls and young women. Participants learn how to create glass and other art projects. Sasha Tepper-Stewart is one of the teachers. She says the program can have a big impact.
I'm thinking of one young woman who came, and she was super quiet and always like had her headphones on the first few weeks of the program. She didn't really want to interact with anyone.
To now,
she's made friends with the other girls and she's like outgoing and she wants to come back.
As of 2025, every young person on probation in Pierce County goes through opportunity-based probation. But there are still barriers. Most of the programs are in the county's biggest city, Tacoma. So getting kids to these programs can be a challenge. And at the end of the year, the county finalized its next biennial budget. In that, the county reduced funding to some of the community partners that offer these programs. The county says it is working with these organizations to ensure that the kids who are served won't be impacted. I'm Lauren Gallup in Tacoma.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch with us. You can email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, volunteer Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee released the transcript of former Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's December 17th deposition defending his January 6th insurrection and Mar-a-Lago classified documents cases. The 255-page transcript released New Year's Eve shows Smith was convinced that President Donald Trump was responsible for the insurrection. During the bipartisan questioning, Smith was asked whether Donald Trump's post-election claims that the election outcome was fraudulent were protected free speech. Smith replied, "There is no historical analog for what President Trump did in this case. As we said in the indictment, he was free to say that he thought he won the election. He was even free to say, falsely, that he won the election. But what he was not free to do was violate federal law and use knowingly false statements about election fraud to target a lawful government function. That he was not allowed to do, and that differentiates this case from any past history. Smith later said the evidence here made clear that President Trump was by large measure the most culpable and most responsible person in this conspiracy. These crimes were committed for his benefit. The attack that happened at the Capitol, part of this case, does not happen without him. We've linked to the full transcript and timelines of the January 6th and classified documents cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.